In this episode of UIndy's Potluck Podcast, where we host conversations about the arts, English 478 students, Destiny Guidry, Sierra Durbin, and Sophia Atkinson, interview poet Natasha Rao, a guest of the Kellogg Writer Series, which is a series that brings writers of distinction to the University of Indianapolis campus for classroom discussions and free public readings. Natasha Rao is a poet and educator from New Jersey. She holds a BA from Brown University and an MFA from NYU, where she was a Goldwater Fellow. Her work appears in Poetry Northwest, the American Poetry Review, Narrative, The Offing, and elsewhere, and she was a finalist in Narrative's 30 Below contest. She is a managing editor of American Cordata and lives in Brooklyn. We hope you enjoy this episode of UIndy's Potluck Podcast.
Hello, book fans. Welcome to the UIndy Potluck Podcast, a part of the Kellogg Writer Series. Today, we are joined by our special guest, Natasha Rao. Natasha Rao is a poet and educator from New Jersey. Her work has been published in The Nation, American Poetry Review, The New York Times Magazine, and the Yale Review. She is the recipient of a 2021 Ruth Lilly and Dorothy Sargent Rosenberg Fellowship from the Poetry Foundation. She has also received fellowships from Breadloaf, the Vermont Studio Center, and the Community of Writers. She was named a Janikin Scholar by the Adroit Journal. She is currently an editor of American Cordata. Her debut collection, Latitude, was selected by Ada Limon as the 2021 APR Sonic Man First Book Prize winner. Rao's collection talks about growing up and looking back, longing and belonging, nature and cultural identity. The heart and humor in these inviting poems are big and genuine. She had us rethinking our relationships with our families, ourselves, and our tomatoes. I'm Sophia Atkinson, a senior creative writing major and a minor in communication.
I'm Sierra Durbin, a junior creative writing major and music minor.
I'm Destiny Guidry, a senior English major with a creative writing minor, and you're listening to the UIndy Potluck Podcast with special guest Natasha Rao.
Natasha, thank you so much for making time for us today.
Thank you. That was such a nice intro.
Of course. All right, let's start off with the big things. You couldn't have picked two better quotes for Latitude's epigraph. The first one is from W.S. Merwin's poem Estuary. We are asleep with compasses in our hands. And the other is from Robert Haas's Mediation at Longinitas. Longing, we say, because desire is full of endless distances. Those endless distances in your poems are mapped across both place and time. This collection is alive and humming with urgent desire. We are convinced that you could write stunningly beautiful poems about anything. And we're curious to know why you chose to write about longing and belonging.
Wow, okay, great first question. That was awesome. Okay, so I think that basically the way that I came about this collection was I had just been writing poems without thinking of any kind of overall themes for the manuscript, but just like writing poems as they came to me. And then I took this massive stack and was trying to see like, what are the through lines here? What are the threads? What can I go with? And I taped all the poems up on my wall, and I found that most of them had some kind of like longing or belonging. And so that was what I decided to center the collection around, and then started writing more poems into that theme. So it's kind of like that is the impulse for me that makes me want to write a poem, is when I think about like just yearning for someone or for a time or something like that. That to me makes me want to sit down and write. Whereas if I'm like really content and having a great day, I don't really feel the need to write about it. So for me, it's like that yearning is what drives my desire to write.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. All right, so this is like kind of going off of that. Mm-hmm. So each of your poems in this collection, while similar in feeling, they still hold their own individual strengths and uniqueness. How do you achieve the consistency and variation of those poems?
Another great question. I think that was something that I was kind of worried about when I was trying to put it all together. And I asked a professor of mine and said, how do I make sure that these all sound like they're the same? And she was just like, you wrote them, so your voice is going to be like don't worry so much about that and just like stay true to your voice. So I think that I, once I stopped trying to focus on making things sound the same or different and just kind of wrote from like my voice, if that makes sense, kind of was able to achieve that like unanimity, but with also like difference in between the different poems.
Okay, that's interesting.
I love that whole, like, stay true to your voice. So we deeply related to the poems in which the narrator compares their adult experience, confused, timid, and constantly messing up, with their child experience, fearless and safe. Can you tell us more about these reflections that appear in your work?
Sure. So, yeah, I think that a lot of these poems, I tend to think a lot about memory and just it feels like childhood and adolescence was a time when there wasn't like such a constant messing up of things. And then that just feels in stark comparison to like, at the time I was living in New York City and just like in a little apartment and kind of everything felt so like constant stimulation and just like stressful. And then I would think about this like softer time of childhood. And so I just found myself writing into that a lot, especially when I was just like thinking, well, where would I want to be right now? And it was like not necessarily a place, but a different time that I was thinking about. So it just kind of was like on the top of my mind all the time. It's like longing to go like as you run along. Yeah.
Okay. So another thing that you talk about a bit is family. So we were wondering, like, since one of the things that we often struggle with is writing about our families and the relationships that we have with our families. And you would think that that'd be like pretty easy to like write about people that you love the most. And it's just one of the hardest things to think of. Mm-hmm. How do you navigate writing about family and what tips do you have for us?
Yeah, so for me, I think at the time when I was writing these poems about family, I never thought that they would be read. Like I didn't think, oh, I'm writing this to go in a book and so my dad's going to read it, which I think was a blessing. Although after the book came out, I was kind of like, oh my God, all these people are going to read this. But I would say like, just write the poem without imagining that family member reading it, because then that's really hard when you're like, you know, my brother is going to see this and I don't want him to get upset, as opposed to just kind of writing the poem for yourself about that relationship. And for me, I just like feel like family is kind of this endless well that I can keep coming back to because there's such strong feelings there. And so if during my MFA, when I had a poem due, let's say, like a week from the day that I got assigned it, and I was just thinking, I don't know what to write about, I would always come back to family because it feels like there's so much to say there and there's such a like rich mine of memories and feelings that go along with it. But I guess the biggest tip I would say is to just like not think about that person reading it. And even if that means like you tuck the poem away for years and like, but as long as it's just the truth of you writing it. And I have a friend who first writes the poem with like her friend's real names in them and then will go back and change details, but write it the true way and then like change or like change someone's hair color, change brother to sister or something like that if you wanted them to put it out. And so I haven't tried that yet, but I was like, okay, that sounds like a
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, that definitely is really, really cool. I'll have to try that out myself too, especially writing for like family and friends too.
Yeah.
But yeah, we love your generous and boldly open-hearted voice and the crystal clear way you have with words. Is this the style that you've always written in, or is it something you've came to over time?
I think it's become more of like a distinct voice through time, but sort of I think in general I tend to think in images and like colors, and just that then finds its way into my writing just because that's sort of how I think about the world. And I love to read lyrical poetry and things like that, so I'll try to take things from poets that I'm reading and maybe emulate some of their work. But I think this voice has sort of emerged over time. If I read like my earlier poems that I was writing in high school, they're much more like verbose and like full page long blocks of text. And then through time I've kind of been paring down and come to that.
Now let's go deeper into the craft and look at some specific poems that we loved. So many of your similes touched us with their beauty. For instance, the ending lines of For Blue Page: I lay these memories like a fish on the cutting board, slice them open and the deepest blue spills onto this poem. Although slicing into a fish can be a gruesome act, these lines depict it so beautifully as a visual for free memories out into the open, like the essence of the fish flowing out of its body. Can you talk more about your process for refining your similes?
That's a really good question. I think One thing that I used to do a lot, which you kind of like brought up, is I would write really just kind of classically beautiful or pretty similes. And then my professor was going through and she was like, it's too neat and too nice. And that kind of detracts from the poem. So I sort of have taken that to heart. And if I put in like a honeybee, I think I then change it to hornet or something like that. Mm-hmm. So now after doing that for a while, I'm sort of gravitating to more like gruesome images, as you said. So I take a lot of notes. And if I like encounter something, like I was just out in Joshua Tree in the desert last weekend and there was this mound of ants and they were all just kind of spewing out in this crazy way and I was like, this could be something, it's gonna be something.
Oh, yeah.
I took a video of it and I was like, okay, file that away. But it's just sort of trying to pay attention to like weird things or things that might be unexpected.
That's cool.
All right, awesome. So we're gonna stray a little bit away from like insects and fish. So now let's talk about tomatoes. Your poem, In My Next Life, Let Me Be a Tomato, is a long and wonderful meditation of the glory that is a tomato. What made you think of tomatoes? And can you tell us about the practice of staying with that single metaphor? Like, what keeps you with that one through a whole poem?
Yeah, totally. So for that poem, I drafted it kind of during the heart of COVID when everything, I was gardening all the time. My hands just smelled like tomatoes. I was like buying all these seeds and had them all laid out and just like dreaming about tomatoes. It became like truly an obsession. And so I just kind of was holding all this imagery in my head. And as I say in the poem, but I every morning would wake up and run down and see like, are they okay? A little alarming now that I think about it. But so that was a poem that I feel like I just kind of had to write. Like I just sat out and was thinking about tomatoes and just like sort of free associating, drafting. And so for, I think obsession for me is like a large part of how I write poems. So for that one in particular, staying with the metaphor, it was pretty easy to be like, okay, what all can I say? Like, what's my experience with the tomatoes? And then maybe like researching a little bit or trying to name the seed packets that I have and talking about what else has tomatoes in it and branching out from there. But it felt like I had to stay in that world because I was like, there's so much I could say. I could feel like a whole book at that time. Now probably it'd be like a struggle, but whatever the next, maybe it'll be like an ant or something like that.
Yeah. Something that I really loved is how ideas seem to echo across some of the poems. The fly mentioned in Worldview in the lines, envious of the fly that has enough eyes to take everything in, is brought back again in Latitude 7 when the speaker states, I unwish, I take it back, I don't want to be a fly to know everything happening at once. Is the communication between poems like these intentional to show the speaker's growth and change of a perspective?
I think so. I mean, that wasn't really something that I consciously sought out to do, but I liked that I had encountered it in a couple other books where there's sort of a coming back to a line or something like that. And so I started doing that a little bit. And then I kind of thought like, oh, okay, there is a progression of age and a different perspective of the world. So let me just react to my previous poem. And I did that in a few of them. And I think only a couple of them made their way into the manuscript. But I feel like that's a way to just be like, okay, take a poem that you've written before and then write in argument with it, a new poem, which I thought was really fun because it's like, oh, that's, I am actually arguing with myself from the past or like showing how I've changed. So yeah, I think that's something that wasn't intentional, but it worked.
So the poem Love Letters, which was one of my favorites reading in your collection, includes 11 winning words from the past scripts, National Spelling Bees. Each letter of each word is lovingly capitalized and separated with dashes so that the reader hears the words being spelled out loud. Through this contest, claiming language leads to a strong sense of belonging, and the celebration of that is so powerful that the parents, the narrator, and us readers all burst into tears. Even though swans in the poem are applauding. Can you tell us about writing this beautiful poem? Also, what do spelling bees mean to you?
Yeah, so not like super competitively or anything, but when I was younger, my brother and I would participate in the spelling bees and compete. Like, it was something that I enjoyed doing and I was good at. And I was like, okay, I like this practice of just like learning words and learning how to spell. And then I sort of forgot about it. And then I watched this Netflix documentary that I think was called like Spelling the Dream or something. And then all these memories came flooding back and I was just like, I have to write about this. This is crazy. And then kind of was looking at, just to like test myself, was like, oh, let me try spelling some of these recent words. And then as I was doing that, I was thinking like, oh, it'd be cool to put these in a poem. Is there some sort of form? And so it just built like that. And then I made a list of a ton of them and just, it was a different way of writing poetry for me because it was kind of like a puzzle. Like, how can I fit all these words together? yeah, it was fun. It felt like kind of like a logic new experiment. So just like, here's a massive list and like, try to make them all make sense.
I thought it was a really cool way, like, how you put, like, all the other words from the past spelling bees and, like, made it all the way down. I even, whenever I was reading love letters, it reminded me of, like, just picturing, like, spelling bees, even though I've never done them, but just, like, I could just easily picture it being really cool.
So there's something we find refreshing about the order of the poems in your collection. They seem random, but also natural in the way that they're organized. What went into your decisions about which poems would go where?
So that was, I think, actually, honestly, the hardest part of putting everything together, because, like I said, I wasn't really thinking about, like, this is going to be a book. And so then I just had this big stack. And then once I kind of decided on the themes and which ones I wanted to include, I've spent months and months just reshuffling things around. And so once I had, like, a general idea, I was thinking, like, just practically, I don't want to have, like, two poems with birds next to each other or something like that. Or, like, if I have a really long poem, then maybe I'll put a short poem next to it. So that was kind of, like, a really difficult exercise. And even now I look at it and I'm sometimes like, oh, I should have switched these two around or whatever. But that was just, like, a very different way of thinking about the work and trying to kind of create, like, a narrative that maybe isn't there. But also, if you put two things next to each other on the page, they kind of inadvertently talk to each other. So I was thinking, like, what poem might be trying to brush up against the other one? So it was cool to think about all those poems that had been written at different times in my life, like, side by side, but also incredibly challenging. Yeah. I think, like, the day before the deadline, I sent a new version to my editor and she was like, that's it, you can't do this again. And, like, 30 restructuring. But yeah,
that's a really fun process. It seems like just trying to figure things, like, it's a little puzzle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we're gonna take a step away from, like, the actual, like, poems and everything, and we're gonna look at, like, your reaction to becoming selected by poet laureate A. Limon, and how you felt when your collection, Latitude, was selected for the 2021 APR Hannigman First Prize book. Like, how you felt and what emotions you went through.
It was unreal. Like, it was the best day of my life. It was January, kind of, like, again, peak COVID. I was just like, everything's terrible. And then got this phone call and I was like, oh, are you serious? I had no idea that this was even possible. I just kind of sent out the manuscript thinking, like, I need to get in the habit of sending things out. And I specifically had submitted to this contest because I'm obsessed with Ada Limon's work, and I feel like I was reading so much of it in the writing of this, so I feel like maybe some of it was also kind of, like, speaking to her. So yeah, it was just truly, like, the best experience ever. And then when I read the intro that she wrote, I just, like, fell down and started crying. Like, it was so nice. And she was incredibly generous and, like, still emails me sometimes, and just I met her for the first time in real life this summer, and it was just, like, so nice to be like, this person is so cool. Yeah, so it was like, I couldn't have asked for a better experience. I was, like, with some friends and I got this call and they were just like, what happened? It was amazing. Yeah,
I guess a follow-up question to Destiny's, what is your advice for, like, sending out, like, manuscripts, and I mean somewhat to, like, the book prize, but just, I guess, like, sending out manuscripts too?
Yeah, I mean, I would say just, like, send widely and just know that there's so many people sending out to things, so to not get discouraged if, you know, it doesn't work out. I have actually been lucky to be, like, judging some of these contests just as, like, a reader for kind of vetting down, like, you know, I'm just shocked by how many good books there are, and it's so sad to have to be like, I have to pick 10 out of, like, 300 or something. So I think just, yeah, sending out a lot. If there's a contest where there's a judge, like in this case, you feel particularly like your work is similar to theirs, or they might really find something special in it, then I would say just definitely submit to that, because that's definitely, like, it helped me. And I think also just to remember during the process of sending it out, which is super disheartening, but just remember that, like, the most important thing is just the making of the poems. And so, like, you know, you can change your manuscript and send it out to another thing. You can usually edit and do things after if it's selected. So to not be like, so just like, oh, if I don't get this, it's the end of the world. And just keep sending things out. And that goes for manuscripts as well as just, like, poems, publications. I think just kind of cast a wide net. And yeah, especially if there's, like, a press or an editor or something that you really, like, feel you connect to, or, like, one, I don't know, publisher might have, like, cover art that you love or something like that. Yeah. And then just, like, you know, submit to that and then say this is what I love about you, and this is why I think we'd be a good fit. So, yeah.
Okay. Wow, that is awesome. Okay, Natasha, it is time to prepare yourself for the really tough questions.
Okay.
Now, you must think on your feet. This is the segment we call the lightning round. Okay. Ready, Natasha?
I think so.
So good, we'll go along. You're in the script spelling the final round. What is your winning word?
Oh, probably wouldn't be a hard word. It'd be maybe, oh my god, this is stressful.
Like, simple words. Yeah.
I don't know, probably, I would want it to be something that's, like, about winning, so.
Yes.
I don't know. What's a word about winning that feel like?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Victor, sort of thing on the spot.
Victor, yeah. Victorious, yeah.
Accomplishment.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'm sorry, I just asked you the question.
No, it's all good.
Okay, if your brother wrote a poem about you, what do you think would be in it?
Ooh, probably us as children, me making him pretend to be like a dog, and I would, oh my God. And we would just be like, sometimes we'd both be dogs, sometimes he'd be my dog, and he brings that up all the time, so I think that would be
the next life he'll be a dog.
Yeah.
I literally did the same thing with my brother. All right, so if you could choose one poet to skip school with, who is it going to be and why?
Ooh, one poet to skip school with. That might be Ada Limón, honestly, because I'm obsessed with her. Or Ann Carson. She seems really cool and, like, lives in Iceland and just does stuff with volcanoes. So,
oh, yeah.
So, like,
really
she would
cool.
have, like, a fun day planned. Of, like, just follow her around.
Yeah. Adventure.
Yeah.
Sounds so fun. Okay, would you rather be a crocodile dentist or an alligator wrestler? I know it's totally random, but it's called the lightning round for a reason.
Alligator wrestler sounds really cool. That's like a great title, I think.
Yeah. Me too.
Okay, describe your best dance move.
Oh, best dance move. I do a lot of spinning, so I think if I get really into it, like, just an unexpected spin and, like, the perfect moment is... That's my classic go-to.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Alrighty, we are at the end of the lightning round, so
you can chill.
Natasha, thank you so much for making time for us today.
Thank you all. Yeah, this was so fun.
Yes, of course. You can learn more about Natasha and her poetry on her website, natasha-rao.com. And while you're on the internet, click over to your favorite independent bookstore and purchase a copy of Latitude. On the behalf of the Kellogg Writer Series in the University of Indianapolis, I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in. We hope you'll join us again for our next episode when we will be visited by the brilliant poet Erin Ballou. Stay classy, folks!
Thank you for listening to the UND Potluck Podcast, hosted by students and faculty of the University of Indianapolis. We would like to thank our guests as well as the Shaheen College of Arts and Sciences. To learn more about the UND Potluck Podcast and hear other episodes, please visit etchings.und.edu. Thank you for your support of UND students and the arts.